Do you ever wonder where all your money went? Like every single time you look at your bank account? Honestly, it's probably all those subscriptions. I felt that way too, until I got Rocket Money. Rocket Money helped me see all the subscriptions I'm paying for, and it was eye-opening. Between streaming services, fitness apps, delivery services, it all adds up so quickly. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has helped save its members an average of $720 a year, with over 500 million in canceled subscriptions. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/Wondery. That's rocketmoney.com/Wondery. rocketmoney.com/Wondery.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code AUDIO to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code AUDIO at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code AUDIO.
From 30 Rockefeller Plaza in New York City, please enjoy this podcast edition of Late Night with Seth Meyers. Today you'll hear late night writers Amber and Jenny tell some jokes Seth can't tell, followed by Seth's interview with Whoopi Goldberg and Dustin Lance Black, who sticks around for a bonus chat backstage. But first, here's Seth.
President Trump will address Congress for the first time on Tuesday to discuss his agenda, which could be difficult, since his agenda so far has consisted largely of complaints about the media. For more on this, it's time for a closer look. Before we get to that, though, it's the day after the Oscars, which means it's time for the annual ritual of conservative pundits complaining about the Oscars. Former Arkansas Governor Mike Huckabee took a stab at humor with this tweet. Watch celebs spew ignorant political venom at Oscars? Nah. Think I'd rather have a colonoscopy. Both happen from same location. Same location? So if anyone looked disappointed last night, it's not because they lost. It's because they spent the night, I guess, inside Mike Huckabee's asshole? But more importantly, President Trump is set to give his first address to Congress tomorrow, outlining his agenda for the country. Today, at the White House, he previewed some of the things we could expect to hear, and as is customary for any Trump appearance, it was a little all over the place. For example, Trump previewed a new infrastructure plan, not by explaining its benefits, but by describing his trips through the Lincoln Tunnel.
Our highways, our bridges are unsafe. Our tunnels, I mean, we have tunnels in New York where the tiles are on the ceiling, and you see many tiles missing. And you wonder. You know, you're driving 40 miles an hour, 50 miles an hour through a tunnel. And I say to myself, every time I drive through, I say, man, I wonder how many people are hurt or injured when they're driving at 40, 50 miles an hour through a tunnel and a tile falls off. And there's so many missing tiles.
First of all, 50 miles per hour is too fast to drive through a tunnel, so tell your driver to slow the f*** down. Second of all, it's the Lincoln Tunnel. Even with all the tiles, it's gonna be lousy. Don't waste money beautifying lost causes.
We're also gonna make all the rats in the subway wear tuxedos, so that that's gonna really class up that operation.
Trump also talked briefly about one of the most anticipated topics in tomorrow's speech, healthcare. Republicans are moving forward with a plan to repeal Obamacare, and yet it's still unclear what, if anything, they'll replace it with. And Trump basically seemed to admit the problem was a little tougher to deal with than he anticipated.
We have come up with a solution that's really, really, I think, very good. Now, I have to tell you, it's an unbelievably complex subject. Nobody knew that health care could be so complicated.
Nobody knew health care could be so complicated. The only way that sentence could be more terrifying is if you heard it just as the anesthesia was kicking in. And then there's the question of what kind of tone we can expect from Trump's speech tomorrow. Up to now, when Trump has discussed actual policy, he usually does so in bleak terms, as he did in his inaugural address. And today, in a rare public appearance on the Today Show, former President George W. Bush was asked about the bleak tone of Trump's remarks and didn't seem to take it all too seriously.
You sat at the inauguration, you listened to President Trump's inaugural address, and he talked about American carnage.
Yeah.
And the fact...
He's either... laughing at the phrase American carnage or remembering how much trouble he had at the inauguration with his poncho. But, of course, the main problem with Trump preparing to talk about his agenda tomorrow is that for the first month of his presidency, his agenda has consisted mostly of attacks on the media, attacks he repeated yet again this weekend. Bush was asked about those attacks and replied with what was widely seen as a rebuke to Trump.
I consider the media to be indispensable to democracy. That we need an independent media to hold people like me to account. I mean, power can be very addictive, and it can be corrosive, and it's important for the media to call to account people who abuse their power.
It's amazing that that basic platitude about democracy and a free press is now considered a brave criticism of our president. Soon people are going to start referring to this W moment as a soaring call for national unity.
I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully.
He was the first president to bravely call for a truce between human and fish. Who knew that almost two decades later, a squid would be working in the White House? So that's where we're at right now. Just saying that a free press is vital to democracy is now considered a brave statement. And it's because Donald Trump won't stop whining about the media. Like on Friday in a speech to the Conservative Political Action Conference, Trump claimed, as he has repeatedly, that when the press reports negative stories about him and cites unnamed sources, they're making those stories up, and those sources don't actually exist.
They have no sources. They just make them up when there are none. I saw one story recently where they said nine people have confirmed. There are no nine people. I don't believe there was one or two people. Nine people. And I said, give me a break, because I know the people. I know who they talk to. There were no nine people, but they say nine people. And somebody reads it, and they think, oh, nine people, they have nine sources. They make up sources.
He's so sure it's not nine people.
There can't be nine sources, because we haven't even hired nine people yet. The only people who work at the White House are me, Spicy, Kellyanne, Frederick Douglass, and that guy who's always telling me to shut my mouth. He's a bad dude. He scares me, that guy.
But this claim Trump keeps making that the media just makes up sources to publish fake news doesn't even make sense according to Trump's own logic, because while he claims the press is making up fake sources, he also claims that there are real leakers in the federal government and that the leakers should be caught and punished. Like when he tweeted on Friday, the FBI is totally unable to stop the national security leakers. Classified information is being given to media that could have a devastating effect on U.S. Fine now. This whole leak thing is turning Trump into Tarzan. Fine now. Leaks bad. Melania wife. Where Melania? Trump sad. But despite Trump's claims that the media makes up sources, his White House seems to think the leaks are very real. So real that they become paranoid about them, leading White House Press Secretary Sean Spicer to try to crack down.
According to Politico, Press Secretary Sean Spicer met with about a dozen of his communication staffers last week to voice frustration over recent leaks. In that meeting, staffers were reportedly told to dump their government-issued and personal phones for a phone check to prove they had nothing to hide.
But really, the best part of this story is this. Spicer also warned the group of more problems if news of the phone checks and the meeting about leaks was leaked to the media. So Spicer tried to crack down on leaks by holding a meeting about leaks, warning people not to leak about the meeting about the leaks, and then his warning about the leaks was leaked to the media. It's like they're trying to bail out a sinking rowboat with a spaghetti strainer. And in addition to attacking the media and cracking down on leaks, Trump also announced on Saturday that he would not attend the annual White House Correspondents' Dinner this year. White House spokesperson Sarah Huckabee Sanders explained his decision this way.
It's kind of naive of us to think that we can all walk into a room for a couple of hours and pretend that some of that tension isn't there. You know, one of the things we say in the South, if a Girl Scout egged your house, would you buy cookies from her?
Okay. Well, one of the things we say in the North is, if a Girl Scout eggs your house, it might be time for you to take a long look in the mirror. In fairness, her father is Mike Huckabee, so it's possible Girl Scouts did possibly throw eggs at their house. Your tweets suck, dude! Even in small ways, Trump distanced himself from the press. On Saturday, for example, he ditched the group of reporters who were supposed to cover all of the president's movements and went to dinner at his hotel in D.C., but a reporter who made a reservation near Trump observed his dinner and wrote about what he saw. For example, at around 8:45, a waiter told a reporter, the president ordered a well-done steak, an aged New York strip. He ate it with ketchup, as he always does. At one point, the president looked at his watch and remarked, they are filming Saturday Night Live right now. Can't wait to see what they're going to do to me this week. Okay, he ordered a well-done steak and put ketchup on it, and he thinks SNL is filmed at 8:45. We've officially elected everybody's grandpa. Maybe the weirdest anecdote from the evening was this story about a Trump fan who briefly spoke to the president. One woman shouts at him, Donald, it's my birthday. Trump stops and says, happy birthday, as he hugs the elated woman. How about a birthday present? Let's take a photo, he says to her. Afterwards, telling the woman she looks very young and has great skin. Great skin? That's like something Buffalo Bill would say to one of his victims.
You have great skin. Put the ketchup in the basket.
Tomorrow's a huge opportunity for Trump. He has the chance to sell Americans on his agenda rather than whine about the free press. And he will have the weight of history on his shoulders. After all, he'll have to live up to inspiring words like these.
I know the human being and fish can coexist peacefully.
This has been A Closer Look. Here at Late Night, every night, I deliver a monologue comprised of jokes written by a diverse team of writers. As a result, a lot of jokes come across my desk that, due to my being a straight white male, would be difficult for me to deliver. But we don't think that should stop you from enjoying them, so we'd like to share them with you now in a segment called Joke Seth Can't Tell. These are two of our writers, Amber and Jenny.
I'm black.
And I'm gay.
And we're both women.
And I'm not. So here's how this works. I'll read the setups for these jokes, and Amber and Jenny will read the punchlines. Here it goes. Footwear company Birkenstock is coming out with a new line of beds.
Said lesbians, I already get laid in Birkenstocks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A recent essay in USA Today argues that America needs more black-owned banks.
A black bank is just like a white bank, except it only has money in it on Fridays.
Okay. A lesbian couple was recently asked to leave a McDonald's after an employee told them they were being inappropriate.
It turns out when you go to McDonald's, you're not allowed to eat tacos.
Jenny!
Would you have preferred I said McMuffins?
Weirdly, yeah. President Trump is scheduled to meet soon with members of the Congressional Black Caucus.
So to the members of the Congressional Black Caucus, I just want to say, it's a trap!
A Burger King in Israel recently offered a so-called adult's meal that came with two beers and a sex toy.
Or as lesbians call it, a Friday night.
I'm learning so much. According to a recent study, the black rhinoceros is on the brink of extinction.
Apparently, cops keep shooting them, too.
Researchers in Malaysia recently released a group of endangered turtles back into the wild.
A group of turtles is called a bale, while a group of lesbians is called the army.
Hmm. You know what a group of black people is called?
What?
A riot.
Oh. Wait. Then what's a group of white people called?
Congress.
Oh, right. Good to know that. My bad. ABC announced recently that for the first time, the lead on The Bachelorette will be African-American.
Still no word on when they'll have their first black viewer.
Oh. So, Amber, you're not excited about The Black Bachelorette?
If I wanted to see a black woman who can choose between any white man she wants, I'd just look in the mirror.
Yeah. That's definitely one I couldn't tell. I would like to do this after my punchlines, though.
You could probably get a couple white guys.
Well, I think that's a question for Jenny.
I think for sure.
Okay, thank you. DC Comics announced recently they are bringing back their lesbian superhero, Batwoman.
She's just like Batman, except her parents aren't dead, just disappointed.
Adele recently won the Grammy for Album of the Year over Beyoncé. Amber, what's the joke?
That is the joke.
Yeah, I need you to know I'm dancing to Adele that
part. Hey, Seth, why don't you tell
me? No, I couldn't.
Aww. Come on, bud.
I feel like I'll get in trouble if I do.
No, you can do it.
All right. I trust you guys. I trust you both. You're my friends, and I trust you. You wouldn't lead me astray because I trust you.
No.
I trust you both so much.
No, yeah, you should.
A man recently became the champion of Philadelphia's Wing Bowl after eating 409 chicken wings in one sitting. Said black people, amateur.
How dare you!
You told me it would be okay!
And how could you?
Well, no, like the black women and lesbians are liars!
Hi, this is Fred Armisen, the music director of the HG Band. Did you know that Late Night with Seth Meyers has a podcast now? That's what this is. And it's released every Wednesday and Friday. Tell your friends who love Late Night that they should subscribe at iTunes.com/LateNightSeth. You'll find it. What I just said, you'll be able to find it. I believe in you.
Our guests are both Academy Award winners. You know her from her work in The Color Purple, Ghost, Sister Act, and as co-host of The View. He's best known for writing the screenplay of Harvey Milk's biopic, Milk. Their miniseries, When We Rise, which chronicles the history of the LGBT movement, airs this week on ABC. Please welcome to the show Whoopi Goldberg and Dustin Lance Black, everybody. Hi, guys.
Hi.
Thank you so much for being here. What do you got?
Well, this is from the green room.
Yeah, we put taffy in the green room.
It's really good, and I'm afraid I can't put it down, so.
Oh, you just brought it out?
I just brought it out.
Okay, that's great.
Yeah, man.
You know, nobody would have taken it. You could have just left it.
Well,
in the
but
green
room. You don't know that.
Yeah.
You don't know. You know.
Yeah, that's true. So first of all, I want to say this. You guys, as I mentioned in the intro, both Oscar winners. Did you watch the Oscars?
Sure.
I did not.
You did not watch them?
I did.
You did?
I did, yeah.
What'd you think?
I mean, you know, the ending was interesting.
Sure.
But I gotta say, Moonlight, has anyone seen Moonlight in here?
Fantastic.
Oh my, it is a masterpiece.
Yeah.
And I gotta say, Moonlight winning that award sent such a message of hope to so many communities that have been underrepresented in film for so long. Broke down walls.
Yeah. What were you doing? Just too busy to watch the Oscars?
I was sick, babe.
Oh, you were sick?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Are you feeling better?
Actually, yeah.
Okay, good.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to find out that you're toughing it through and bringing your germs out here.
Too late.
But this project sort of came together almost because you guys met in 2009 when you won your Oscar for Milk.
That's true.
That's the first time you met.
Well, yeah.
How'd it go down?
When you win the Oscar, you go from the stage into a press room. But in between that year, they had this room with all the previous Oscar winners. And I'm already stunned. I couldn't breathe. I walk in, and there is Whoopi Goldberg, like my mom's favorite actress in the world. And she looks at me, and she grabs me, puts her arms around me, and says, "When's the Valencia Street movie, baby?" Because that's where the women's movement was in San Francisco.
Yeah.
And you'd performed up there for some time.
Yeah, I lived up in San Francisco, in the Bay Area, for a long time. And watched a lot of this sort of come together and watched this fight that the gay community began, you know, and the splintering and the coming together and then AIDS, you know, everybody having to figure out why people were dying when no one would talk to her. Nobody would say, this is what's happening. And the woman that I play is a woman who was really trying to, you know, do her best to try to not freak everybody out. But it was just, it's such a great piece. And I loved Milk so much. You know, I loved the film. And so I just said, you know, when are you going to do the rest of the story?
I'm so glad you said that. But also, I can't believe he just won an Oscar and you wouldn't even let him get to the press room.
See?
Before you were saying, I have your next project and you need to get started.
But that's my style.
I just said that to him this morning.
That's why we like each other. Because you got to keep going. This thing's not done.
Yeah.
You know, I knew Milk wasn't the end of the story. I knew there was more. And it was the best reminder saying, hey, you got that trophy, but that's not the end of your road. Yeah. And that's what she said.
And it was,
day.
I mean, it's, you know, it's one of those things where you hope that people will tell the stories that are out there. But sometimes they don't. There goes my earring.
Oh, my goodness.
You know what that means?
What does that mean?
I just lost 4 ounces.
Congratulations.
Yeah, I just farted into your seat.
Here's the bad news. I'm pretty sure each piece of taffy is 8 ounces. So it's not.
Well, here comes the rest.
But so this, you decided to tell the story sort of through four different activists that were key to the LGBT community. Are they, did you know of them before you started doing your research and work on Milk, or were they people that came through that?
I knew of one. One is featured in Milk. I just didn't, Cleve Jones, who was Harvey Milk's political aide, I was using him more as somebody to help me find other real people. Right. Like, I traveled the country, I made calls around the world for about a year looking for real people. And originally I heard the name Roma Guy. Everywhere I went in the country, people were talking about this activist who had been fighting for women for some time, for women's equality. Everybody knew her name. Mm-hmm. I'd never met her. And I called Cleve and I said, would you introduce me to this Roma Guy? And he did. And she was the first to sign on and say yes. But I realized in that research how rare it is that someone is a lifetime activist.
Yeah.
Like Cleve Jones had been, that someone fights from their teenage years all the way till now, which is what all these characters do, and that they never gave up that fight. It's incredibly difficult work. My mom called Cleve Jones the gay Forrest Gump. As a filmmaker, I call him the gay Zelig, because he was literally at every single critical moment in the movement, and he always tried his best to do the right thing. And we could use a lot more Cleve Joneses and Roma Guys and Ken Joneses in this world right now.
Well, I think it's happening. I think people are standing up, you know? Because really, you know, whoever you are, wherever your mind is, everybody's rights are as important as yours. And if they can take those guys' rights away, that means they can come and take your rights away. So we all have to sort of band together to make sure that everybody has civil rights, because if one doesn't have them, nobody's got them.
Sure.
That's just the way it is.
It's a show like this. I feel like when you hear the premise of the show and what it's about, it's a four-night miniseries, mm-hmm. and you think, oh, this sounds like an HBO show or this sounds like a Netflix show. It was very important to you to have it on ABC. Explain that for us, Lance.
I mean, I was shocked when I heard ABC was interested in an LGBT history story, because I grew up in Texas in a Southern Mormon conservative military home, right? As a gay kid, that was a lot.
Yeah.
And
that's the hat trick right there, yeah.
And I was allowed to watch ABC. I was allowed to watch network TV because it told family stories. And I thought, boy, this is such a great opportunity to introduce my LGBT family to my family in the South.
Yeah.
And to say, in these divided times, we got a whole lot more in common than you might think. Mm-hmm. And I worked really hard to use that common language. I learned in the South, you come to dinner and talk about politics and policy and science, you're going outside. But if you tell an emotional story, you tell a family story, you tell a story about love, you might get somewhere. You might change a heart. You change a heart, you can change a mind. You do that, you might change the world. I wish we could start figuring out how to use some language we got in common more in this world than all this divided language.
It's great that you're setting out to do that. And, you know, I think one of the things post-election we keep coming back to is, are we just telling the things we believe to other people who believe them? And I think it's so lovely that you're trying to do it in a forum, on a channel that is in everyone's home, and hopefully you can change some hearts and some minds. I want to ask real quick, you were just in London doing stand-up with
us. Yes, I was.
That's exciting. How does London feel about what we've done over here?
Well, yeah, they couldn't really say very much because of Brexit.
Sure, right, yeah.
So it seems that everybody is having one of those moments. But you know what? We've been through this before. This is not the strangest thing we've seen. It's the one we've got most recently.
Sure.
And you know what? It really comes down to this. Do you care about the Constitution? If you care about the Constitution, pay attention. If you don't care about the Constitution, then whatever you get, you'll be happy with. It's that simple, you know? So I'm hoping that, you know, more and more folks, whether you agree or disagree, as long as it's done within the law, you know, I will bitch about stuff that I don't like.
Yeah.
But I will come after you if you mess with the Constitution.
All right. Well, that sounds like a plan. Congratulations on the show, guys. Thank you so much for being here. Always a pleasure. Whoopi Goldberg and Dustin Lance Black, everybody. When We Rise airs all this week on ABC. We'll be right back.
Hey, this is Kevin. We're backstage with Dustin Lance Black. Just finished the interview with Seth, and had a couple more questions for you. Can you talk a little bit about the we in When We Rise?
Yeah, it's a great question. this show doesn't start with LGBT activists. Mm-hmm. It was never to me when LGBT people rise. It was always about this interconnectedness between social justice movements, how we need each other if we're going to succeed, how if we don't, if we're not marching arm in arm, we can lose our rights. So this starts with a character who, or a real person, who started the women's movement, one who comes from the peace movement, one who comes from the black civil rights movement. And those are the worlds they really fought in and cared about until they were outed or they came out. They came to San Francisco seeking refuge and safety. And when they found out that that wasn't there either, they used their skills to build it, to build that safety over 4.5 decades. But I got to say, they never, ever lost sight of their interconnectedness to other social justice movements. And by the end of this series, you see how they work just as hard for their neighbors in the immigrant community, for their neighbors who aren't covered, don't have health care, and they fight for health care for all in San Francisco. And then Cleve Jones, as he fights for the workers and their families in San Francisco. It's really about the interconnectedness of minorities. And I'll just, one other thing, loud and clear. One of the great things about the internet is we know that every single one of us is a minority in one way or another now in this world. It just depends on how you slice that pie. And so I think that everybody in the world, if they're paying attention, should understand they are one of the we and when we rise. And I hope they'll tune in, and I hope they'll heed the lessons of these great activists.
Is there anything from your personal experience that you were able to write into the series?
Yeah. I mean, I made a big promise from the Oscar stage about, what was that, 8 years ago now, to bring federal equality to the country. At the time, the big issue was marriage equality. And I stepped away from filmmaking for a number of years to fight for that at the federal level. And I made it to the Supreme Court. And you see that story unfold in the last 2 hours. But I pretty much wrote myself out of history. There is one character who's interviewing Cleve, and that interview acts as one of the frames of the series. And that's very much what I did, and probably a little bit of the me in it. But for the most part, I wrote myself out, but that experience I had really helped when I was writing the scripts.
Can you talk a little bit about that timeline from your speech at the Oscars in, what was 2009, until, you know, kind of where we are now, and kind of what's changed for the better or the worse?
Well, I mean, we made great progress in the Obama years. And just having a president come out in favor of marriage equality, stand up for trans protections, for employment protections, we weren't there. We're not there yet. In fact, you know, a lot of people might say, boy, it seems out of order. You have marriage equality, but you don't have a right to hold a job or a home or rent a home in this country. Legally, you can be fired or kicked out of your home in this country just for being gay, legally, in most of the states in the nation. So we have made great progress. We're clearly not there yet. And in fact, now we're seeing threats to the progress we have made. It was one of my biggest concerns when I started making When We Rise. It's why I designed it the way I designed it, is that I felt like with all those successes, we were getting kind of self-interested, almost drunk on our successes, and we stopped fighting for our brothers and sisters and other social justice movements. We lost those alliances, what Harvey Milk had called the coalition of the S's. This show was designed as a warning not to do that, to start to care about others and our neighbors as much as we do our own rights and our own protections. Now it's a roadmap of how to beat back a backlash, and there is a backlash right now, and the president is leading it with his team, and now we need to use the lesson of coalition building to push that pendulum back in the direction of progress.
Lance, thank you so much. This the series is great, and we really appreciate you being here.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, okay.
Very much.
Thank you.
Want more Late Night with Seth Meyers? Be sure to follow the handle at Late Night Seth on Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, Instagram, and Snapchat. You can also watch full episodes of Late Night at LateNightSeth.com or on the NBC app. And please tell your friends who are fans of Seth Meyers to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.